Well, it is so good to be gathered in worship as we continue in our worship series titled Lifelines. If you've been around the last few weeks, you're mindful that we've been exploring gifts that God gives us to navigate life's choppy waters. We're looking during this Easter season of resurrection and hope with vibrant, beautiful flowers around at this paradox that while we have this central message of our faith, that Christ has conquered the grave, that the tomb is empty, that love and life win, at the same time, life can be difficult, challenging, and overwhelming. We have a faith that orients us toward God's hope for the world, and yet sometimes we feel as if life is hopeless. We become overwhelmed by the struggles and the challenges that we face. And so each week, we've explored a different gift that God freely gives us to help navigate this confusing world. We started all of it exploring how God gives us the gift of community. We don't have to navigate life alone. We have one another, saint and sinner alike. We journey together through the choppy waters of life. And in its very gift, that gift itself, we find so much comfort. Now, we've explored other gifts, though, too. How we have a voice to guide us and lead us. We preached that on our namesake weekend, Good Shepherd Sunday, that we have the voice of a shepherd who is guiding us, leading us, comforting us, protecting us. We don't have to navigate it all ourselves. We have the voice of Christ to point us to true north. Last week, Pastor Alex preached a fantastic sermon about how we also have the source of life itself through the imagery of the vine and the branches. We just stay connected to the source of life. We need to be plugged in to what God is doing because the fruit that we bear, it's not up to us to manufacture it. It's not about our own energy. It's about God's Spirit working through us as we stay connected to Christ. This week, the gift is so simple. Sometimes when we read John's gospel, we feel like we need a set of theologians in our corner to help us unpack it. John's gospel, for me at least, is the hardest gospel to grapple with intellectually, theologically. It's certainly the most philosophical of all the gospels. The writer of John was influenced by Greek culture, Greek thinking. The beginning of John's gospel, there's no simple story of an angel visiting Mary and the birth of Jesus. It gets heady really quick. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Everything came into being through him. Not one thing came into being apart from him, right? It's like, what are you talking? It's like a college 101 level Greek mythology course. But in John 15, we don't need any theologian to help us understand the profoundly simple message that Jesus offers. And I love that. I'm almost afraid of adding anything to it because it's so plain. John 15 is right in the middle of a whole series of chapters in the gospel where Jesus is saying goodbye. It's called his farewell discourse. He's been preparing his disciples for these moments ahead. Christ knows that he is going to Jerusalem. He'll be wrongly convicted. He'll be tried. He'll be hung on a cross. He'll be crucified. And he's trying to encourage his disciples. In other words, he's saying goodbye. And in John 15, he says it so simply, "If I have one wish for you, one thing that I want to be at the center of your life, it's that you would love one another." Three simple words. Love one another as I have loved you. Love one another. All of the commandments can be summarized in this. Remember, you did not choose me. I chose you. Effectively, Jesus is saying, choose love. In a world where you have so many choices that can guide your life, that can orient your life, I want you to choose love. I think Jesus understood that the disciples of his time and all the disciples to follow, you and me included, would have choices to make in this world. Have you ever considered the question, what is truly guiding my life? Functionally, how do I make decisions? How do I plan for my future? How do I decide what to do with my resources, my time, my energy, how I show up at work, how I raise my children, how I engage with my community? And functionally, our society gives us so many values from which to choose. There's the value of self-protectionism. Make choices in life so that you stay safe, so that you're comfortable, so that you and your loved ones are well cared for. There's the value our society gives us of prosperity. Accumulate wealth and resources, produce and multiply. There are other values that aren't so savory, but we know the temptation of them, the value of fear. Hold your cards close to your chest, be calculated. And if we're not careful, we inadvertently live a life of risk management all the time. Well, I don't know. There are so many values. But the value for disciples I believe Jesus wants the most is an ethic of love. Choose love. Choose love. So the question for us is, what is love? How do we define it? It's a word that we say so often in our culture, right? We love our significant other. We hope we love our significant other. Sometimes we don't feel like we love them. Don't look at them right now. Some of you were arguing on the way to church this morning. How do I know it's true? Well, because sometimes it's true in my own life. We love our children. We can love our city. We can love our country. But we also throw the word around loosely, like we love ketchup. Right? What is the predominant cultural image that is construed for us, though, when it comes to love? Let's look at literature. Let's look at story and stories that grab hold of us. I so often think of Romeo and Juliet. How many times has that storyline been depicted through different forms of art of these two that come from divided families that should not love one another culturally, but their love is so strong that they're willing to die for love? Or think of all the romantic comedies that we love watching. Now, 20-year-old Lorne would not admit that he watched romantic comedies publicly. I'm here to tell you, I'm kind of a fan of them because it's a predictable storyline, right? Two people fall in love, something happens that jeopardizes the love, and the rest of the movie, without fail, is an epic story of the person trying to display, usually through a bold, extravagant act, that they actually love the person, and you're rooting for them all along the way, and there are challenges, and there are things to overcome, but the story has a penultimate scene where this dramatic display of somebody riding in on a hot air balloon is declaring the love in such a grand way, and then boom, they reconnect and the love flourishes, right? It's so predictable. But all of these stories and all of these narratives reinforce something that I think is actually potentially dangerous for us. It's the idea that love needs to be bold or grand or extravagant all the time to be real love. And if we're not careful, we can read the Gospels through this lens as well. I mean, just look at what Jesus does. And if you're anything like me, you marvel at the stories of Jesus in Scripture where it seems to be this bold, audacious, extravagant display of love. Jesus fed 5,000 people on a hillside. Wow. Jesus walked on water toward the disciples in the boat when they're overwhelmed. I can't imagine walking on water. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Jesus transformed six vessels of water in Cana at Galilee into the best, most abundant, extravagant wine anyone had ever drank. But there's an opportunity for us. And the opportunity for us is to put on a different lens, a different filter when we read the stories of Jesus. Of course, we see the extravagant. We see the bold. We see the miraculous. I mean, this is the Son of God. But do we also see the simple, the everyday, the ordinary? I was thinking about 16-year-old Lauren recently, because I live on a street in Marymount that once a year you can hardly pull into your driveway because cars park on both sides. It's prom night. We live on the street that at the end of our street is the Marymount Concourse, where all of the couples show up to take photos with their moms and dads and aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas before prom. And so once a year there is a parade down Center Street of all of these students in ill-fitting tuxedos that are kind of awkward, and you know, they all look like Pee Wee Herman, by the way. The tuxedos these days are like, anyway, it's a whole nother topic. And then the girls, you know, they're in these high heels trying to learn to walk, some of them for the first time. And this year, instead of just watching the parade of people go by, we went down because my niece and nephew were both in prom and they had their dates. And so there's, you know, uncle and aunt and grandma and grandpa just, you know, getting a peek of the prom date. I started thinking during that weekend of when I asked Becky to prom. 16-year-old Lauren was convinced love needed to be bold and extravagant. And so I got Becky's locker combination from her good friend. And I decided to hide a bouquet of flowers in her locker. So I stuffed them in there. I had to like crunch them in. The night before, I said, Mom, can you go get some iron-on letters? I want to make a t-shirt. Remember when you would iron on letters? And I ironed onto this t-shirt, Becky, will you go to prom with me? This was before like promposals were a big thing. And I put a hooded sweatshirt over my t-shirt so nobody would see me. And I stuffed the lockers in there. And during third period, I waited in the shadows of the hallway for when Becky would. And I had this, it was like a romantic comedy. Like it was going to be amazing. She would open her thing and pull out flowers and turn around. And there I'd be. You know, Becky, will you go to prom with me? And third period, she goes to her locker. She opens the locker, and the flowers, like, topple out. And they, like, fall apart, and they're half in and hanging. And so she's picking up the flowers. And now I'm like, and I'm trying to take my sweatshirt off. And sometimes it's hard to take a hooded sweatshirt off, and it's getting stuck on my head. So I'm, like, doing this, and she turns around, and by the time I get it off, she'd been, like, looking at me. And I was like, and she's like, fine, yeah. I'll go to prom, right? Oh, Lauren. What does love look like for Lauren nowadays? Very different than this extravagant display of what love looks like. You know, love today for me often looks like coming home and getting home at 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night after an evening meeting or something. Becca has been caring for three children, 10, 7, and 3, feeding them, clothing them, bathing them, reading them stories, getting them to bed, handling the household while also her own personal passions and priorities. And there's a mound of dishes in the sink from the day of feeding our children. Love often looks like, although I kind of kick the ground a little bit, walking over to the sink and rolling up my sleeves and just washing dishes. There's nothing sexy about that. But it's love. This is the type of love that I think is equally present in the Gospels if we look for it. Yes, Jesus multiplies and feeds thousands, but do we not see the everyday, ordinary act that it begins with? Jesus simply feeds people. That's an ordinary thing to do. And through it, an extraordinary love is displayed. Consider what Jesus does with the woman at the well. An everyday, ordinary act of talking to somebody who others don't talk to. It's an ordinary thing. But through it, an extraordinary love is displayed. The wedding in Cana. We can focus on the 6 jars of the best wine ever, but it actually begins in a very ordinary act of obedience. It's the mother of Jesus who notices there's a problem. She kind of nudges Jesus. He doesn't want to do anything about it. And be mindful what his mom does. In front of the servants there, she simply says, "Well, I leave it up to him. Do whatever he tells you." And I imagine she just kind of takes a step back. Jesus kind of kicks the dirt. Okay. Obedience. Faithfulness. All throughout the Gospels, Jesus simply does ordinary, everyday things. He touches people that others just won't touch. An ordinary act of humanity through which an extraordinary love is displayed. Do you know that it's an ordinary act to get in your car, to drive down to Taft Elementary School, to sit across from a student, and help them learn how to read? That is just ordinary stuff. Driving, sitting, listening, and helping. But through that ordinary act, an extraordinary thing happens. Children become empowered. Children grow in confidence. Children know they're not alone. Do you know it's an ordinary thing to take ordinary bread and ordinary peanut butter and ordinary jelly and smush it together and put it in an ordinary bag and drive it to somebody who's hungry downtown and to hand it to them? Do you know that's an ordinary sandwich? But to somebody who is hungry and feels forgotten, it's an extraordinary meal. If there's one thing I want us to focus on as a community of faith, in the context that we're planted, Good Shepherd, y'all are ambitious. You're high achievers. You want more. You create a lot. You do a lot. We think love has to always be grand and big and bold, and we need to conquer the world. But let us never forget that real love is made manifest in the ordinary. Let's not lose sight that this is the type of love that Jesus invites us into. A love that sees people, recognizes them right where they are, acknowledges them, touches them, heals them, speaks to them. It's this type of love that has always changed the world. Margaret Mead once said, "Don't ever underestimate a small group of people determined to change the world, because they're the only ones who ever have." Ordinary acts through love create extraordinary outcomes. I am so excited for our future together. I am so excited for what God is already doing through our community. We have over 50 years of a firm foundation built for Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. It is a foundation that has been poured in love. And so if this is the source of our being, the ground upon which we walk, we can go forward together in great confidence that God is going to continue healing, blessing, and uplifting the world through our ordinary hands and our ordinary feet. And to that I say, amen.